Bleed red, white and black? The next hour is for you. Welcome to The Animal Enclosure.
Look, this is going to sound like a crying St Kilda supporter, but they have not really received the benefit of this new AFL initiative to tweak the fixture in favour of the teams at the lower end of the lap. The fixture this year has them in the second or third hardest draw in the year despite finishing 11th and despite not finishing in the final since 2011.
The Animal Enclosure. Sharing opinions. Sometimes incoherent, but always passionate.
And thank you for joining us in the Animal Enclosure, where we party like it's 1966. It's Bozzy here. We're so glad you took the time to check us out in our often threatened, very rarely delivered podcast. I'll be joined by Monkey shortly to take a look at the Saints in 2019. It's been a bit of a mixed bag to this point as we sit at the halfway point of the season. The start to the year was electrifying, 4-1. They now find themselves 5-6. So we've sort of had a little bit of high and mighty and a little bit of low and meager. It's been an interesting season, and we'll go through what's gone right, what's gone wrong, who the stars have been, and what we actually think might happen as the season unfolds. I'd like to take the opportunity here to thank those who took the time to let us know their thoughts ahead of the podcast. And apologies if we haven't quite got your name right, or the pronunciations and the like. We'll get better along with those and properly identifying the great responses and contributions you've made. Love to hear more from you. So please feel free to join the conversation online at The Animal Enclosure on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So with no further ado, please make yourself comfortable and listen to The Animal Enclosure's mid-season review of St Kilda in 2019.
The Animal Enclosure. Party like it's 1966.
So joining me on the line after all this time, we finally pulled our finger out. Monkey, how are you?
Yeah, good, Boz. What's going on, mate?
Oh, you know, just living the dream, mate, living the dream.
Yes, yes.
You know,
sick dream it is. We didn't win Tassalova. That's a bad thing. So,
but more importantly, St Kilda didn't lose a game of football on the weekend. How good was that?
That is true. That is true. We had a week off.
And we had a former captain star on Queen's birthday. What more could you actually want?
That was fantastic.
It was pretty good. So it's been an interesting season to date. A season of two halves, half a season of two halves almost. The first half was unbelievable and the second half not so much. But before we go through our mid-season review, let's delve into a few more pressing issues with knee-jerk reaction.
The Animal Enclosure. Party like it's 1966.
Rushing Jarryn Geary back was a mistake.
In hindsight, I think so now. But I suppose at least it had nothing to do with that injury that he received the first time. So compartment syndrome, whatever it was.
But it's sort of one of those things that a few people have, a few media personalities and a few fans, obviously the fans a little bit more out of frustration and a little bit of, disappointment have voiced the whole thing of why not just wait until after the bye. Yeah. But there's no guarantee then that you don't have a freak accident that breaks your leg. It's an unbelievably unfortunate situation for a guy that deserved so much better. The whole story of him being able to get back as quickly as he did, was it like 30 stitches or something up his leg? Almost like a it was almost some sort of ancient text on his leg, the scar. It actually was almost sickening seeing the scar, let alone even having seen the photos that went around the day after the operation, which I would never want to see again. But and that's just someone looking at photos, let alone being the guy that's actually had to sort of pull yourself up from that and then sort of lead the side. Like that was an amazing story, and to sort of have a tragic, well, tragic's probably a little bit like a football tragic ending to it was really sad.
Yes, that's very true, but it's just a fluke. That's all it was, fluke, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's freak.
Could have happened to anyone.
Well, it could happen. Look, it could have happened this weekend. It could happen 3 weeks' time. The fact that it happened then had nothing to do with rushing him back, and what's the point?
Exactly.
And the other thing in play, as sad as we might feel or down as we might feel about the actual Saints season, that was a pretty important game against Port Adelaide, the potential to put us 6-5 and well and truly in the finals race. Like, our season's alive. Like, why wouldn't you bring your captain back? It's not like last year where we were 1-5 at this point, or, you know, 2-9 at this point of the season. The season was done. You can sort of slowly bring blokes in. Like, even now at five and six, our season is still alive.
Yeah.
Why wait a game if he's ready?
It
defies logic to sort of suggest that it was a waste of time or a mistake. It could have happened at training. It was that kind of incident.
Exactly, yes. And people saying, why'd they bring him back early for it? Nothing to do with what he had.
Yeah. If his scar had of
split
open and he sort of, you know, like, maybe then, or if he had of, like, you know, had some kind of problem with his calf or something along those lines, that maybe you could sort of sit there and say that the medical staff had been negligent in their duties.
Yeah.
But you know, having his leg snap in a tackle like that, we've seen it happen unfortunately a few times now. One robbing Mitch Wallace of a premiership medal probably against us in 2016. So it happens, and
it does,
and it's part and parcel of the game. As sad as it is, it's to put that anger into the coaches and playing staff and medical staff is I think a little bit ridiculous.
Yes, exactly. It's just really non-issue. Someone brought up for some reason. So.
Another one. China is a waste of time.
Yes.
It is?
Yes. It is a waste of time.
Is it?
I'm not sure about the figures. They said it was a sellout, but the game I watched wasn't a sellout. Unless there was a reason for a sellout, I don't know. But I watched, what's his name? Port Adelaide's...
David Koch,
yeah. Interview, say, oh, it's great for football and stuff like that. Well, it's probably great for them because I don't think they've lost a game over there yet in 3 years. Am I right? I'm right in saying that.
That's their 3-0, yeah.
3-0, but is it great for other teams going over there? I don't think it is.
Well, he's got $500,000.
Well, I suppose. But where was that game going to be? Was it the home game?
It's our home game. It's
our home game.
Yeah.
So did it cost us 4 points?
I don't believe so. I think that performance was pathetic. It wouldn't have mattered. Yeah. It wouldn't have mattered where we played. If we turned up like that, that had nothing to do with China. That had everything to do with us just not turning up to play.
Yeah,
I know.
Exactly.
I know there are some interesting stories about the health of players in the lead up to the games, which some people might suggest
might not have been the situation in Melbourne, but I don't think that that... well, I mean, unless it's actually worse than what we've been told, that doesn't fully explain away the effort across four quarters there.
Oh, no, it was pathetic. Yeah, it was very, very ordinary.
But to get back to the actual China situation, and of course, a lot of people have had a lot of fun pointing at the empty seats and questioning the crowd figures and things like that. But it's not about having 10,000 people in the crowd today.
No.
And you can see that in the sense that you've got the Australian government, the South Australian government, and the Chinese government investing heavily into the contest, which is where the money comes from, which is why Port Adelaide are just giving us a cheque for $500,000 for our home game, which sort of paints a picture of what they're making. But we also have those opportunities too with regards to sponsorships and the like. So
I suppose you look at a broader aspect, you look at it and go, the sponsorship opportunities is probably a lot greater than probably the 4 points is worth, if you know what I mean.
And you know, and just because it's in China doesn't preclude us from winning the game. I would be interested to find out what the actual dimensions of the ground were, especially given you and I went to Wellington all those years ago to watch the first game over there, and
we did,
and it kind of no longer happening, partially because of the Wellington government being a little bit less inclined to pay for it to be, and partially because of the fact that the ground wasn't quite suitable. But the ground in China seemed to be a little bit narrow as well, which didn't really help when you're getting absolutely obliterated in the middle.
No, exactly. Yes, it doesn't. It's one kick and it's in the full forward line. So, yeah.
Look, it may end up being a wasted time, in the sense that if the whole measure of the experiment is to have a billion Chinese people watching AFL footy every weekend. But if it is to sort of profit off the partnership, the trading partnership between the two countries, they're our largest trading partner, strategic partner there. And effectively, you've got the governments of the two countries effectively paying for it. It's a free hit for the AFL to attempt something. So if you keep getting to go over there, not just for free, but to actually put some money in the kick as well, and at the same time potentially grow something, I can't see how it's a waste of time. Obviously,
it's not a waste. Yeah, you're right. If you're looking from that aspect, it's probably not a waste of time. But 4 points aspect, as you said, we wouldn't have won anyway if it was Melbourne or Adelaide or wherever we want to play. But 4 points aspect, I just think how many teams have cost games and even missed finals. Because, for example, I think it was a couple of years ago, Melbourne lost to, or Bulldogs lost to someone up in the Northern Territory and cost them final spot because they sold their home game and stuff like that. But
just win.
From an aspect. Yeah, exactly. And I suppose that's all.
Look at Hawthorn, because the same, where the club that sort of had a major problem with it in the early 2000s, where we kept playing in Launceston and losing. We had a real opportunity to sort of own Launceston, and we pulled out because we couldn't win there. And look at what what Hawthorn have been able to manage there, and they've made it a fortress. You can sit down and make excuses, but just win. Good sides win. That's what you do.
And that's all it comes down to, isn't it? Yeah, and look, if we pinch one next year, was it a 3-year deal, I think?
Yeah, it's a 3-year deal, yeah.
3-year deal, and we might pinch one next year or the year after. You never know, we might win both. So,
and then just own China. A billion supporters. New St Kilda supporters.
Yes, well, can't be a bad thing, can it?
With Carlton and North already in the market for a coach, the Saints need to move on Richo and move on him now.
Yes. I need to make their mind up early, or sign him for another couple of years. But what's his contract to do next year?
There's a trigger clause. So he's
is there?
So he our understanding, obviously we aren't in the club and have not laid eyes on the contract, but we're led to believe that the contract has a trigger clause at the end of this year, that if he wins a final, he gets another year. It triggers the last year of his contract. If he doesn't, the Saints are able to not have the final year, so therefore he would be able to... Well, he wouldn't be contracted for the following year unless they decided to make a contract offer to him. It's an interesting... It's an interesting one because it really all comes down to a question of whether you think he's the right man or not. So if you don't, and everything the Saints have said doesn't necessarily point to that, like they've gone out and spent a lot of money building a crew around him. They went to great pains last season to paint the picture that it was that the club had let him down in not putting the people around him. And then the year that they actually do put the people around him, we have a massive injury list. It will...
Yeah, true.
I think we are in a situation that we are not going to... I would be amazed if we moved on him now, unless there was some kind of mutual decision. But I can't see any decision other than a renewal being made before the end. So the decision to move on from him will not take place until the end of the season, if that decision was to be made. We can't afford to pay two coaches. And the other thing about it is although people might point to North's two wins and win before it last game of Brad Scott, and Carlton's win on the weekend as proof of what can happen if you sack a coach. I think the idea that a coach can make that big a difference in that shorter period of time is fanciful. The systems are all in place. They can make a couple of minor changes, but they can't actually the time to actually make those changes isn't there. I don't see any real benefit in paying for Richo to sit at home. Instead of coaching us, he might as well be there. And it'll be interesting to see if we get our players back in the run home, what actually ends up happening. I honestly think that if he gets us to 10 wins, he'll keep his job. But
yeah, so do I. Yeah.
I don't know. I understand that there's an awful lot. An awful lot of people that want to see the back of him, but I think it's one of those situations. Unless you know you've got something better, I don't see why you would move on a coach of 5 years, 6 years to employ someone new. You'd have to know what you're getting.
I don't see why the big all of a sudden Carlton North sack their coaches or leave or whatever they do, respectfully in that, and then. All of a sudden, we need to... Brad Scott wasn't that good of a coach. I'm sorry, everyone's going, oh, he'll get a job, blah, blah, blah. He's not that good a coach. He's a career coach, but what do you do at North? He got in two prelims.
From outside the top four.
From outside the top four. But if he wasn't... I don't see what the big deal is now. And if we make a move on our coach... I think we have to draw a line in the sand and go, okay, you've got two more years to get this list back to, from injuries and stuff like that, and go, see how you go. If you don't do any good, or if you don't want it, just part ways.
Well, it's an interesting thing, because you sit there, and I think this is, I think Carlton's treatment of Brendan Bolton is diabolical. I think the idea that you actually employ somebody... actually cut the actual guts out of your list and make him, take those losses because you've killed your list, and then point to those losses as the reason why he can't be coach is repugnant. The same thing's happened here at St Kilda to a degree, not quite to the same length. I think that we clearly had expectations to be better than we are right now. But were those expectations wrong, or is he not living up to them? It's an interesting equation.
Yeah.
You know, I understand why people would want to move on him. I'm less that way inclined. But yeah, I don't see why we should be rushed into the decision just because North and Carlton are already out looking for new coaches.
Yeah,
exactly. I think that's part of the reason why Carlton have done it. Is because they didn't want to miss out on the best coach. And look, you know, the best coaching option might already be sitting in the chair next to Alan Richardson at the moment.
As in Brett Ratton.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I suppose he's done it once before, isn't he? So experience.
Yeah, and the results since he left Carlton make him look even better than he was when he was there.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I read today that North was set to throw a 5-year deal at John Longmore with $1.2 million a year. Like, is there no? Do they know he's got a contract? Do they still think of that, or are they just like?
You just get the best man.
Or stuff like that.
Get the best man.
I understand that, but... Yeah. But is he the best man? Because he was an old North Melbourne sport.
Good record.
Is he the...
His worst season is...
Oh, fantastic
worst season
coach.
Is 14 wins. He's a...
I know, fantastic coach, but that was with a fantastic list as well. North Melbourne isn't a good list.
But could they get some players? But bugger North Melbourne.
Yes,
let's talk about the Saints. But anyway, we're still not talking about the Saints for a second here. Colin Carter, is the guy a moron?
I have to ask. I read this and I don't know who he is. I'm trying to think who he is. Mine is blank.
He's like the president or something at Geelong, isn't he? Chairman at Geelong. What a ridiculous convergence of ideas that he has presented to the AFL and plenty of people have run with. For those that aren't aware, he's presenting an idea that the history of the AFL should actually start at 1870 rather than 1897.
I was trying to think where I knew the name from. Now I know who you're talking about. I did read about this. Yes.
And that the competition's history should be split up into three different regions: pre VFL, VFL, and National Era. The one small problem in what he's proposing is, of course, that the VFL / AFL is a breakaway from the VFA, which is the competition that started in 1870 and that will be celebrating its 150th anniversary next year. And to actually suggest that having broken away from the competition, you can then just co-opt its history as your own is a travesty. The clubs themselves can claim whatever premierships they want. They won them. They can count them. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You won a VFA premiership in 1876. Count it, whatever the hell you like. You know, Joe Blow played 17 games for Geelong in the VFA. Count them, but they're not VFL AFL games. They're games for your club, but they're not part of this competition. And the idea that somehow you can just co-opt it is ridiculous. It's the blinding or sort of merging of lines that the AFL is trying to do, even just the way that they refer to the game itself. You know, the game of Australian football is now colloquially referred to as AFL when the AFL is a competition. It's not the actual game itself. And the whole sort of splitting up of the pre-1989 flags from the post-1989 flags is dumb too, because in 1990... the VFL just became the AFL. It's a name change. It's the exact same competition. And this competition has nothing to do with the VFA that happened before it, apart from the fact that they were bitter rivals for the best part of, you know, a century. And
yeah, exactly. Is there some reason behind him doing this? Or
he wants to have a 150-year celebration next year.
Okay. Yeah, so is there a personal agenda? Does he make money out of it or something?
I said, it's the lunacy of so they've argued the fact that it's at the moment we're forgetting history, whereas my argument would be is that no one is saying that Geelong didn't win the six or seven or whatever premierships they won in the VFA. They're just not VFL, AFL premierships.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's really not that...
It's not that hard.
It's a non-issue. Like, yeah. It's just made an issue.
Yeah, it's the second time he's brought it up.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
And, yeah, and so the urgency, of course, is the 150-year celebrations they want to have as part of this.
Let the VFA, or whoever it is, new VFA, VFL, celebrate the 150 years. It doesn't have to be anything to do with the AFL.
No, exactly right. Mm. But
yeah.
I think we can agree he's an idiot.
Yeah, I'd go with that. Yeah, he's an idiot. Yeah. So
you agree with me on that, you bald-headed flog?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
But
I've got no comeback.
How?
You've got more hair than me.
But seriously, are we seriously at this point of time in the AFL that calling the umpire a bald-headed flog gets you kicked out of a stadium? Another fan got banned for 3 weeks for calling an umpire a green maggot.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
What's a Collingwood fan like? Got told off for cheering too loudly. Is this really the game that we love?
Well, Boz, you go to the football majority of the week, sort of, now. So, well, still. And we've heard more atrocious things than that. So, it's just, yeah. And I think I saw Joffa from Collingwood talking, going, if they want us to put cardboard cutouts in the cheer squad, we will. So,
yeah, it's an interesting one. And I don't understand. Whilst I support the idea of us trying to cut back on some of the major abuse and antisocial type behaviour, to be suspended for 3 weeks for calling an umpire a green maggot, I don't know.
It seems a bit. We're a nanny country now, so it seems to go toe and toe with each other. So I don't know. He's been suspended for 3 weeks. So if he shows up in Canberra or Queensland, do they know he's suspended for 3 weeks?
Well, that's another interesting sort of situation. Yeah, but it's all just stupid to begin with.
Oh, it is. It's just, again, non-issues. Like, if they're personal, saying I'm gonna do this and this and this to your kids or this, or that's just totally different. But bald-headed flog, like, move on.
So let's turn our eyes to our mid-season review.
Yes.
The purpose of the exercise.
Yes.
The Saints 5-6 after 11 rounds, sitting in 11th spot, I think it is, had some very, very... you know, good highs and some pretty low lows. Probably the lowest being the most recent game against Port Adelaide.
Yes.
We put it to our fans to answer the question, or some of our followers on Twitter, what's gone right? And we received a few replies. At Heath Moore said, we've discovered some real talent. At Damien Hare said we've won 5 games, revealed some young talent and depth, as well as being competitive amongst a horror injury run. At Prince P951968, Marshall, Wilkie and Parker, promising start to a season despite injuries. It's hard to actually to go much further than that. I think the two major highlights on the what's gone right front is our first year recruits, Matt Parker and Callum Wilkie. How good have they been, Monkey?
They've been fantastic. How old's Callum Wilkie? I think he's
22 or 23.
21,
pretty young.
Yeah, 22 something. I just think it goes to prove that big, well, Parker especially, like, what's he, 23?
24?
22, 23, yep. Yeah, so the same age. I just think that couple of extra years in senior football, I just think helps. What was he playing? Division 5 in the Waffle or something?
Well, 2 years ago he was playing B grade or whatever.
Yeah, so I just think it helps and builds them and stuff like that. So I think you can pull these players out, big players, and they don't have to be 18-year-olds to take ages and stuff like that. Well, you'll go recruiting youth, obviously, but it's just, yeah, they've been fantastic. And we probably owe Matt Parker at least one game, I reckon. Maybe two games he's won us.
He's been a one-man highlight reel for much of the year.
He has.
Callum Wilkie, 11 games into his AFL career, he looks like he's been playing down back for 11 years. He's so calm, he's so assured, doesn't make the wrong decision. How on earth it's taken this long for him to get into the AFL is unbelievable. But it's the Tim Kelly at Geelong sort of situation. It's now got clubs desperately trying to find the next nugget in the state leagues, aren't they?
Yes. Well, it happened. It was 10 years ago when they found Podsy Adley from at Geelong, didn't they?
Like, well, he was barely hiding though. He was kicking bags for fun in the VFL.
But he wasn't getting the game, was he? That was the thing. And then they drafted him as a mature age recruit.
Yeah.
And I just think I think it's more, and I would have thought there was, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the mid-season draft, I would have thought more clubs would go after those players around 24, 25. I think still they went after like your 29 or 20, 21-year-olds.
Well, it's all about where you sit, I guess. It's the opportunity to get some good young talent. It was an interesting one. So the talk, especially from a security viewpoint, was that they would be going for a ready-made player, but instead they've gone for a long-term prospect. Another big tick for the Saints in 2019 is the fact that after 11 rounds, we've got 5 wins. After 22 rounds last year, we had 4. So that's got to be a big plus. And they've
could have been 6 as well. Like,
yeah, they should have beaten Fremantle. Should have beaten Fremantle. They, should have beaten Collingwood's a bit strong, but they should have been in a much better position at halftime than they actually were. Halftime, three-quarter time, they actually put Collingwood to the sword, and they just couldn't put it on the scoreboard. Which is, we'll save that for negatives. More than likely, goal kicking will come up a little bit there. The victory over Hawthorn was especially pleasing in that they were 25 points down and ran over the top. The Melbourne win was another, which was really enjoyable at the time, which temporarily put us on top of the ladder.
It did. Very excited then.
Which was exciting. It did seem at that point in time that we were riding the crest of a wave. It hasn't quite worked out that way, but if you look at the sides that have beaten us since that point in time, they all sort of fill pretty high positions on the top of the ladder, near the top of the at or near the top of the ladder.
Yes. Look, 5 wins from 11 so far. If we get 10 wins, you get 11, you might get lucky and get in. Their percentage is pretty poor.
Mm-hmm.
Not as poor as some. But, so, look, if we get 10 wins, I think it's a good season, to be honest. It's better than 4 wins last year, so...
The other big plus this year, big tick, the improvement in players like Rowan Marshall and Josh Battle. Rowan Marshall has just been an absolute machine in the middle. Some of his numbers, perhaps not hit outs, but some of the other numbers that he produces every week put him in the actual elite category of ruckman. Possessions, contested possessions, clearances, those sort of things. He's right up there with the actual cream of the competition. He is a massive plus. And Josh Battle, how he hasn't actually earned himself a Rising Star nomination yet.
Is he called for?
Yeah, is beyond me. I think that perhaps the AFL doesn't know that he actually is eligible.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Because, you're right. Like, I didn't think he qualified, so maybe they think the same thing. Yeah. So I don't know. But he's come from nowhere. I didn't. All I know him was he used to go out with Brendan Vowell's daughter.
Did he?
Yeah, the one that's with, what's his name? Daniel Rioli.
You follow?
No. I remember Brendan Vowell on the radio. Brendan Vowell on the radio asked Nick Riewoldt once, oh, hey, is Josh Battle going? He's seen his daughter, blah, 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 or something. So,
okay. We'll let you off this one time.
Okay, thank you. But Marshall, I think, is going to be 3 or 4 years, I reckon, injury-free, hopefully. He's going to be next Brady Grundy. but
he's an all Australian in the making.
Definitely.
He, I would also suggest, is short price favourite to win the best and fairest at end of the year as well.
You reckon? Okay.
Yeah. Well, who would you put ahead of him?
Yeah, I suppose Billings maybe, but
Billings had a really good start to the year.
Yeah, sort of gone off a little bit.
Gresham is still, without question, our most exciting player. Just hasn't quite had the amount of opportunities we probably would like from him. Same with Jack Sinclair. Jack Sinclair has sort of shown his class a little bit through the year. Just hasn't really been able to impact on games enough, probably.
And I think you've got to look at those five wins and go, you've done that without your best player, like for the majority of the year, Jack Stephen. I think he played in the first three games.
He's been out. We'll touch on injuries in a second when we get to what's gone wrong. I think one of the most overwhelming answers to this, when our Twitter followers answered it almost to a man, the response was goal kicking and forward entries. And it's hard to fault that. I'm just looking for the stat here. They had a stat that came out last week which looked at the club's conversion rates opposed to their expected conversion rate. So basically, the Champion Data had plotted the shots at goal for every club across the year based on the competition averages from those positions.
Yep.
St Kilda, 42% conversion rate.
Jesus.
Second worst in the competition. We've been second worst or third worst for about the last 4 years. What was more disappointing about that was the fact that our expected conversion rate based on our shots at goal was the fourth highest in the competition. So we had an expected conversion rate of 48.8%. So basically, the competition average from all our shots would see the team convert at 48.8% of the time. We're converting 42.1%, which means a difference of 6.7%, which is a long way the worst in the competition.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you probably, those listening probably didn't need a stat to say that. It's just the fact that when they watch the football and put their head in their hands whenever a St Kilda player is having a shot for goal, no matter where they're kicking it from, it tells them that we've been atrocious. But you are 100% spot on. The stats back you up in the fact that we are actually atrocious at goal kicking.
Yeah, well, it's been a problem for a few years now, isn't it?
It's hard to believe that when you look at players like Jack Billings, who you would expect to, like, you know, nail
a player with his kick,
but then put him in front of goals. Even Gresham this year's not that his figures have been atrocious by any measure, but he's missed some really gettable shots this year. And that's the thing. And look, you look at what Tim Membry at the start of last year had gone from the most elite kick in the competition to probably about as bad as you or I.
What is that? Who is our forwards coach now?
Well, my understanding is it's still Ben Dixon. So,
God.
So it was interesting sort of seeing, like, you go back reading newspaper articles from the start of last year, and the tone of the article was the fact that the goal kicking was turning in the right direction, and then you look at them at the start of this year, and it was always going to be a 2+ year process. Yeah. So it's an interesting one, and maybe that's the thing behind Tim Membry, was the fact that it sort of broke him first, and he's now back because he's actually not quite to where he was, but he's definitely our most reliable kick for goals.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. So definitely.
And injuries. Do we really? Well, not really a surprise. I wouldn't have thought.
They speak for themselves, don't they?
Pretty much the season started. Jack Stephen. You know, you had Jake Carlisle.
Dan Hannanbury.
Basically, like, you know, on the verge of coming back now. But but pretty much any player you could think of, and just in the position, Paddy McCartan. But the situation has really been that almost every week, at least 10 players that would be in our best 22 have been missing. Dylan Robinson, it's been a horror show, and it's starting to turn. It's starting to look like a few players might be back. There's talk that Jake Carlisle might be able to go in the VFL in a few weeks, which is surprising.
Considering he was out for the year, we lost 6 weeks ago. So
You've got Dan Hannabry potentially
next week
playing soon. You know, Max King's been kicking goals in the VFL. Still learning, still really lean, sort of a few years off being his best.
But you've got blood, him at some stage.
The injury wheel, I am touching wood, knocking on wood, does appear to be slowly turning. If we can get some of those players into the side with a fixture that we'll start we'll touch on soon, there could be some momentum to be built in the run home.
Well, you never know. So,
and China, definitely one of the things that's gone wrong this year.
Yes.
Depending on who you listen to, between 3 and 870 St Kilda players were, sick with food poisoning in the lead up to the game.
The coach.
The coach, pretty much anybody that they've ever known. The game itself, that was repugnant. It was as disappointing as Good Friday was last year. We basically had our moment in the sun, in the spotlight. Yep. It was our big game, our moment to sort of announce ourselves. And and in both situations, the expectation was that last year the expectation was we'd win. This year there was a belief that we could win, and to actually just be swept aside by a Port side that best is pretty good, but
I was going to say it's not that good.
No. To just actually make us look second rate was really disappointing. They definitely can't be putting on a performance like that when they play Gold Coast this weekend in Townsville. No. And of course the piece de resistance in the China trip was, of course, our captain breaking his leg in a freak accident after, being a wonderful story of resilience and hard work. It was a shocker.
Will he play again this year?
I wouldn't have thought so.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Even with just a broken leg, I wouldn't. But it was a snap the fibula, didn't he? I think off the top of my head.
So. Yeah, I mean, obviously I would. For those people sitting there going, what are you idiots? No, I don't know. My gut feel is that he won't play. That there's only 11 rounds left. I don't think there's enough time for him to get back. Yeah. But he got back for the. No one thought he would get back from the compartment syndrome. So
exactly.
I'm sure he's sitting there plotting his plans to prove us all wrong.
No, that's true. That is true.
So let's nominate the player of the year to the halfway point of 2019. We've had a few nominations online, and they are Josh Battle, Callum Wilkie, Jade Gresham, and Rowan Marshall. All of whom, and Matty Parker. Matty Parker had his fans too. The overwhelming response on our survey from these nominations was that Rowan Marshall was our best player for the year. But all of the players there had some fair claims to it. We've touched on most of them before now, but you'd have to agree Rowan Marshall is definitely the player of the year at this point in time.
Yeah, this stage he is, yeah. I think Gresham Billings would have been if they were consistent throughout the year. But
well, Billings was clearly our best player after three games.
Probably after three or four games, yeah, exactly. He's probably had nine.
I think he was in the top sort of three or four in the AFL Players Association after about three or four games.
Probably had 8-9 votes in the Brimlow as well.
Yeah.
But, I think consistently Rowan Marshall has been your best player by the length of the Fleming straight. But I suppose that's where it starts, isn't it? Like, you look the other day and, Good Friday, Queen's birthday, when Melbourne's best player is their ruckman who gets 35 touches. Like, it's got to start somewhere. So I think, Rowan Marshall is their best player for the year, and hopefully he keeps going. So, because his value's only going to go up. So,
and he's signed up. He has signed up for
3 years.
So he is locked in, and definitely couldn't be happier about that.
I think he's cost himself a bit of money. I reckon he could have waited a bit longer. But look, it's good for us that he has signed up, but I think he's cost himself a bit of money. Maybe they just said, well, we've seen your improvement already, and here's the dollars that you want.
I think.
And, yeah. So,
look, they can't all just be sitting around trying to wring out every last dollar. The club's done a pretty good job in recent years in signing up most of our players. So I think there's, look, and you listen to our players talk, and there seems to be a real sort of desire and affection for the place. And so hopefully that continues.
Yes, that is true. But I think he's going to be a superstar. So, yeah.
The run home, Monkey. Listen to this for a final 11 games for the Saints in 2019. Gold Coast in Townsville, Brisbane at Marvel, Richmond at home, North Melbourne away, Geelong away, the trip down the bloody freeway.
Yeah.
The Bulldogs at home, Melbourne at home, Adelaide away at Adelaide Oval, where we're yet to win, Fremantle at home, Carlton, and then the last game of the season away to the Swans. That is actually a pretty good run by any measure.
If we can get some players back, that is a decent run home. You could go, and I shouldn't step too far ahead. I reckon you could win at least 7-8. The only ones you wouldn't put a pencil through them because they don't think like that. It'd be Geelong, and there's one other there.
If we catch Richmond in 3 weeks, if they continue to struggle with injuries, potentially that's. Cool. There's the Geelong game, the Adelaide game away.
Oh, that's the game, Adelaide, So,
and, you know, so...
And Sydney, in that last game, Sydney aren't the best at... Is it at the SCG,
At the SCG, yeah.
Yeah, they're not the best team at the SCG, so you never know. So...
So it's a pretty appealing run home, which has come about from our terrible season last year. So...
Yes.
Look, I don't think we will win enough games to make the finals, but we could definitely finish the year with between 10 and 12 wins, though.
Yeah. What do you reckon you need to make the finals?
12, 13.
12 and good percentage?
Yeah, we don't have good percentage, so we
need to flog a few sides, don't we? Pretty much. So,
So I think for us to make the finals, we pretty much have to win every winnable game and...
Yeah.
And, I can't see it happening. We'll lose one of them.
No.
So we'll wait and see. But I think there's a definite chance. Look, especially if we can get moving and potentially sort of trip up a Brisbane at home, and then maybe you sort of, with a bit of momentum up, you never know what could happen.
No, exactly. Yeah. You just don't know. Like, so we'll be 5, we need 7 wins, we'll need 8 wins, don't we? 13 wins will have to get us in. So, people are talking about 11 wins getting you in. I can't see 11 wins getting you in. But,
no. I don't see it. It could, but that would involve Carlton and Gold Coast winning games in the run home, because at the moment they're obviously just a bad week to be saying that, given the fact that Carlton won last week. But they've not been winning games, which is just chalking up wins for sides. But look, I think, like, at the start of the year, I predicted that we'd finish in that, 8th to 12th type position. I think we're still looking at that 8th to 12th type position. So
yeah, so it won't be a failed season. So.
In my mind, it won't be, but obviously, you know, if you go back a few years to our strategic plan, we were supposed to be about second, 2 years into top four finishes by now.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The power brokers make those decisions, don't they?
But I think, look, and everyone points to that as a failure, but the key point with strategic plans is you're not supposed to make plans that are easy to achieve. You're actually supposed to stretch it. So so if they actually had a sat there and said, look, you know, that we'll be finishing with a chance of playing finals in 2019, whilst they might have achieved it, that's a failure in a strategic plan in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But plans never go according to plan, do they?
So a grading for the Saints up to this point, 5 and 6. I think that, I don't know what you think, but I think a lot of St Kilda fans might be forgetting, based on the fact that we've lost 5 of our last 6 games, that had they been told at the start of the year that we'd be 5 and 6 at this point of the season, they would have taken it in a heartbeat.
Yes.
I think, in my mind, I think that we are about where we should be. I don't think that we've underachieved with our list, and especially when you sort of consider the injuries that we've had to deal with along the way. I think 5 and 6 is a pretty good result. I think it's not a great result. A great result would be 6, 7, 8 wins. So there's no way knowing that it could be an A or a B. In my mind, it's a C, a solid C, sort of doing what you expect, not failing, but not exceeding either.
Yeah, exactly.
By all means, I would love for us to be going better than we are, but I think realistically, this is the side we've got.
No. C's a good. I'd say so. You have to a pass mark. Are we 11th? So there's six sides below us. Seven sides below us. So yeah, I definitely think it's a pass mark, and I think it's where we expected to be if we were.
And pretty much every side that's beaten us is in the 8.
Yeah, exactly. And if we were 7-4, would we be defying expectation? Yes, we would. But I think we're about right. So, and our run home is easier than some. I won't say easy because we lose easy games sometimes, but there's every possibility we could be. So what did that put? 12 and what was it? 22 rounds.
Yeah.
12 and 10. We could go 12 and 10, and that would push us to a B if you're on a grading scale. So or probably even higher. But so I just think a C is a good fair grade. So
12 and 10 from 4 and 18.
Exactly.
Is a solid B.
Yes, definitely a solid B. So,
B plus, maybe. But yeah, so but look, yep, at the moment, it's a C. I think we will hope to see better from them in the rest of the season. They're not, like I said, they're not exceeding expectations. They're just sort of tucked away in the corner, just doing what's expected of them.
Exactly, yes.
So that's our mid-season report. Monkey, thank you for joining me.
No problem, Boz. Good to talk to you.
Let's stop being so lazy and get these things out on a regular basis.
Yes, yeah, we go. It's busy working, well, kids in my aspect, but stuff like that. So, but no, that's all right. Let us know when you need another one.
The first step to a 12 and 10 or better season is the Gold Coast this weekend. So hopefully we can talk about the first win of the back half of our season.
Yes, exactly. And hopefully we win well and get some percentage back.
So, hopefully we're not crying into our beers after another one.
Okay, let's just hope we win.
Okay. All right, mate. You have a good one.
Same to you, Boz. Thanks for that.
Bye.
Thanks, mate. Okay, see ya.